You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and on last week's show, I hosted a journalist who assessed the Union view on the Illinois side of the river and who gave a look at key topics in the coming year as well. Today, it's time to examine Iowa. What were the key stories from 2021 and what are the most important topics that are likely to emerge in the coming year? To do that, I'm happy to have a veteran and well-respected journalist from the Cedar Rapids Gazette who writes on politics and state government. He's known to a lot of folks in our region. He's James Lynch. James, thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Good to be with you, Robin.
Well, it's an interesting, every year seems to get more and more interesting, and there's no such thing as a down year anymore. I'm not sure there ever was, but it was an intriguing year in Iowa again, and I'm kind of curious to see what somebody like you who's been around and understands the players and the processes, what you came up with. But start off with whatever topic you think was one of the top areas of concern in the state for 2021.
Well, Robin, when you first asked me about the top five stories, the political stories for Iowa, sort of like, well, there really aren't any blockbusters. I guess my mind always goes to elections, and actually this year it was more about the election outcome. I think perhaps the biggest story was the January 6th attack on the Capitol in Washington, D.C. While it didn't happen in Iowa, there were Iowans involved, and certainly the impact was felt by Iowans. And we're still trying to get to the bottom of it. At least there's a U.S. House committee that's trying to get to the bottom of that. So I think in many ways that was for the entire nation, including Iowa, the biggest political story of the year, and could continue to be, you know, the biggest political story of 2022, depending on what the U.S. House committee finds.
Now that's one of the people. I remember one of the prominent people that was photographed that day was from Iowa, as I recall. And I'm not sure if he's had, I know there was some talk about his case, and has that been disposed of? Do you know yet? Or
I don't know that it's been completely disposed of. A lot of these people are trying to negotiate some sort of plea bargains or you know, he's, my recollection is that he has pleaded guilty to at least some of the charges. Mm-hmm. There's another person from the Cedar Rapids area who basically has said that he will cooperate, I guess, with authorities, and he's sort of in that limbo too, where they're trying to reach an agreement on what will happen to him. So, you know, they're like I said, this is one of those things that we're still waiting on, and as legal situations often do, they drag on for a while, so this could still be a story in 2022.
Yeah, what else do you have?
Well, I think another big political story for Iowans was Trump's impeachment or impeachment, and you know, he was impeached by the House again in 2021. Of course, the Senate didn't go along with that. You know, and Donald Trump, I guess you might think, is a big political story. You know, despite the impeachment, he drew a tremendous crowd at an Iowa State Fairgrounds rally earlier this year where he endorsed Senator Chuck Grassley's reelection. And certainly there are a lot of Iowans who are favorably disposed toward the president, the former president, and hope, and many of them hope to see him run again in 2024. So Donald Trump's influence remains strong.
It's interesting. He does seem to have seems to just do stronger and really relate well to folks in Iowa, in spite of the fact he fell short in the Iowa caucuses. But I remember going to one of his rallies in Burlington. It was quite a sight. I'll never forget it, taking some of my students there. But he seems to really have connected well with Iowans over the years, and it seems like it's one of his favorite places to go, as evidenced by the fairgrounds rally.
Right, and it's a bit of a puzzle, I think, to a lot of us that this New York City millionaire or billionaire, depending on whose numbers you want to use, relates so well to a lot of working class Iowans, blue collar folks, farmers, you know, people that there doesn't seem to be a lot of you know, connection, obvious connection. But yeah, he remains tremendously popular here in Iowa. And like I said, I think if, you know, he finished second in the 2016 caucuses, but I think in 2024, or if the caucuses were today, I think he'd likely win the Iowa Republican caucus.
Yeah. He disputes the outcome, which is a total topic. I think every time he falls short, he disputes it. But that's interesting. Two very interesting stories there so far. What else do you have?
And I think another political story, maybe closer to home, was the second district congressional race. Marionette Miller Meeks prevailed by 6 votes after recounts in 24 counties and roughly 400,000 votes cast. She prevailed by 6 votes over Democrat Rita Hart. And, you know, I mean, a 6 vote margin is interesting in itself. But what was also interesting to me is that as these recounts were being conducted, the variety in the ways in which they were conducted from county to county. And this dispute continued for some time, with Hart claimed there were 22 legally cast ballots that were not counted. And eventually, she withdrew her petition to Congress to intervene in this election, and that was a Republicans, you know, criticized her because she had not gone to state court to, you know, make her case there in state court. But she had legally won the election. Instead, she went to U.S. House, which is controlled by Democrats, and asked them to intervene. But eventually, she withdrew that. Marionette Miller Meeks, it was a bit of a surprise that she won this election, given that the second district is seen as Democratic. Dave Lobsack carried it, you know, defeated a Republican incumbent back in 2006 and was reelected every 2 years since then. So, you know, and the district went for Donald Trump by about 9 percentage points, if I remember correctly. So, you know, or excuse me, it went for, man, he turned around here. even though, you know, Wolfsack had carried that district for a number of years, Republican Marionette Miller Meeks was able to win it in 2020.
It's you know, I was trying to guess what you might choose, and I overlooked that. That's a great story on two levels, in that number one, it's kind of a smaller version of the larger debate we're about to have, I think, in our country about elections. The accusations about fair elections, which Iowa, geez, I mean, Iowa's got a great reputation, I think, on elections overall, certainly better than we have in Illinois. It's a microcosm of what we're going to be talking about here in the next couple of years on the fairness of elections debate and the political angle of that congressional district, as you mentioned. It's been Democratic for years, and we seem to be going through a change in the coalitions of the party where working class voters in those river counties, like in our area, those blue collar voters do seem to be changing over to the Republicans. So that's an interesting choice on two of them.
Yeah. Another story that, you know, has a lot of political implications has been the COVID-19 pandemic. The politicization of the response. We've had more than 7,000 deaths here in Iowa, and yet it's become a very political issue with Democrats, you know, wearing masks, saw this play out a little bit in school board elections this fall here in Iowa, where parents who were concerned about their children being forced to wear masks in school rose up and in some cases were elected to school boards. We saw the Iowa legislature pass a bill in a special session to say that if you quit your job voluntarily because your employer required you to wear a mask at work or to be vaccinated, you could collect unemployment insurance benefits. It was interesting that the business interest groups were opposed to that plan, but Republicans passed it anyway. So I don't know how many people will benefit from that, but I'm sure there will be some folks who feel like they're being pressured to get a vaccine or to wear a mask and quit their job as a result of that.
It's still amazing, I guess, if you think back, three, 4 years ago, and all this hyper-partisanship, I, for one, wouldn't have dreamed that a health and medical issue would be politicized to the degree it has. And it's just another indication of where we're at in our country.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, and there doesn't seem to be any political aspect to a pandemic like this. And yet it's become very political. You've seen the reports saying that, people who are dying tend to be Republicans. They're not getting vaccinated. They're not wearing masks. But I agree that a couple of years ago, I would never have said that a health and issue like this would have this political ramification.
Interesting. Yeah, you have some more here?
Well, one more I'd mention is the Iowa legislature, and controlled both the House and the Senate are controlled by Republicans, and they are, I guess, feeling their oath and passing things that, I think in some ways have surprised people. Going back to an earlier discussion we just had, they're changing election laws, shortening the time to apply for the ballot and the time for early voting. And there's sort of the social issues, those hot button issues. They're trying to restrict access to abortion, and there's just a whole list of things that they either taken action on or are discussed and are on the to-do list, school vouchers, things like that, ideas that aren't necessarily new but really haven't gone anywhere for a number of years, despite discussion, and now with Republicans in control of the legislature and the governor's office, it seems like these may actually get done.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson. And my guest today is James Lynch, who's a veteran reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette, who writes on politics and state government. I'm sure not all of our listeners are aware of James and the work he's done. Well-regarded journalist, I think respect from both sides of the aisle, from what I've picked up in my contacts. He's. I asked him to take a look at the past year. What were the top stories, top five stories? So far, we've got, he listed the January 6th attack was number one, then the Trump impeachment, two, and then the second district race won by Congresswoman Marionette Miller Meeks was his third choice, COVID, and then the Iowa legislature. I have to say I got most of them right, but I didn't get the second district. I overlooked that. That's a great catch. And now the second half of the show, we're going to kind of turn it over to James and have him look into his crystal ball and see what five or so issues he sees emerging that would be most important for listeners to track for the coming year.
Well, I think, Robin, 2022 midterm elections, obviously elections. I mean, here in Iowa, we have Senator Grassley speaking in eighth term. In the Senate, polls show that Iowans think it might be time for somebody else, but the polls also show he has an 18-point lead on former Congresswoman Abby Finkenauer, who seems to be the most prominent of the four Democrats seeking the nomination to face correctly, it appears she has the most money, most fundraising ability. Mike Franken, a retired three-star admiral, is seen as viable challenger, perhaps with the because of his age and breadth and depth of his experience, might be a better match against Grassley. Again, another race we're watching here in Iowa is Governor Ken Reynolds is running again. Some of the political prognosticators are calling Iowa solid Republicans in terms of that race. Deirdre Dishier, Des Moines businesswoman, and Representative Ross Smith from Waterloo are seeking the Democratic nomination. And they're really hammering, Democrats in general are hammering Governor Reynolds on her workforce crisis here in Iowa. Most of the sentiment is that it's her race to win or lose, I guess you might say, that just given her connection with Iowa voters, she's going to be very hard to beat. And then, we have U.S. House races. Representative Miller Meeks will be running for re-election. It's interesting that her home in Ottumwa is outside of the new district that was created as part of the districting that states go through every 10 years. So it looks like she'll have to move into Southeast Iowa, what will be the first district now. These numbers are very confusing. They keep flip-flopping the first and second district, it seems like. And she likely will face University of Iowa law professor, Representative Christina Bohannon, who is a freshman legislator. And, it's a Democratic district. And with Johnson County, Democrats start with about a 50,000 vote advantage over Republicans who have to rely on GOP votes in the rural counties. So it will be a tough seat for Miller Meeks to hold, but we were surprised that she won in the first place, as we talked about. Here in Linn County, which is in the new 2nd District, Representative Ashley Hinson will face Democratic State Senator Liz Mathis. They were co-workers at one time at Cedar Rapids television station. A competitive district, two strong candidates, a slight Democratic advantage in voter registration, but it's become more Republican in recent years. 3rd District looks competitive for Representative Cindy Axne. 4th District, Randy Feenstra should breathe to re-election if he avoids the GOP primary. Overwhelming Republican voter registration advantage there. And then, of course, legislative races. The new redistricting plan seems to favor Republicans. Some analysts say they should maintain control of the legislature for the next 10 years, possibly achieving veto-proof margins in case a Democrat gets elected governor.
Interesting. That could have been all five of your stories for the coming year, because again, Iowa will be in the spotlight nationally, as it always seems to be with elections, with the key U.S. Senate race. As you say, Grassley with the advantage, I think it's fair to say at this point, and Reynolds as well. Were you surprised? I guess I want to ask this before we get to the next issue, but were you surprised Iowa's got the independent commission for redistricting, and there were stories that the Republicans in control weren't going to necessarily abide by that, but then they wound up accepting the second version of the map. Was that something you were hearing as well?
There was a lot of speculation that Republicans were going to do what they could to gerrymander the state, that if they rejected the second plan, they could amend a third plan, which basically they could substitute their plan for the third plan. I didn't think that was likely to happen, but as we got closer to actually yay or nay on the plan, I started to think that perhaps they would draw their own plan, just because, like I said earlier, they're feeling their oats. They're feeling very strong. And, like, if we can do it, why not? However, I think reason prevailed. The second plan may not be as favorable to Republicans as they might like, but it's you know, analysts who watch redistricting very closely think it's a good plan for Republicans. There are at least two of the four U.S. House districts will be competitive, maybe three. I mean, the Western Iowa district doesn't look like it will be competitive any time in the near future because of the Republican voter registration advantage. And for the legislature, it seems pretty favorable for Republicans. So I guess I'm not surprised that they accepted that second plan.
Yeah, it seems to follow Iowa's general trend in going from more of a battleground state to trending purple, not red.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Yeah,
the elections will be the major issue. What it would do, you have some other topics for people to be watching the coming year?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to watch the legislature in 2022, just because with the trifecta at the State House, it appears the only thing that can stop the GOP would be internal disagreements, and that's a real possibility. There, you know, you have some very hardcore conservatives who are pushing in that direction, and there are some moderates who aren't moving as fast or as far on some issues. So, you know, I think that's going to be an interesting one to watch because of some of the issues that, you know, that are sort of teed up. And for example, abortion is one of those where Republicans have been seeking restrictions for a number of years. Now with the Supreme Court, you know, possibly overturning Roe versus Wade, you know, there's speculation that the legislature might pass something in anticipation of that decision. Of course, we won't know probably until June or sometime after the legislative session what the outcome of that Mississippi, the challenge to the Mississippi law will be. The other big issue that I see from the legislature is what they're calling a moonshot on eliminating state income tax. That's one of those where I think they're not everybody is moving as fast in one direction as you know, there are some people who are moving faster than others towards eliminating state income tax, and it's probably something that will have to be phased in over a number of years, that you can't just eliminate that all at once. I think another interesting item to watch, Robin, will be whether the legislature decides to get involved in how American Rescue Plan funds are used, how the federal infrastructure dollars are used, Build Back Better, assuming that passes at some point, how all those federal funds are used. So far, the Republican-controlled legislature has left all those decisions to Governor Reynolds and has not taken any sort of an oversight role in the use of those funds. So I don't know if they'll get interested in how to spend their federal dollars or not.
Interesting. Yeah, those are all. It's interesting. A lot of your topics are several of them are federal, more federal type issues, but they have enormous implications at the state level.
Yes.
I think those are going to be interesting to follow as well. The legislature, as you said, and some of these spending decisions. Is there anything else on your list for the coming year?
I think that pretty much covers it. I mean, like I said, because of the election, we're really going to be focused on that. But yeah, you know as well as I do, Robin, that there are always things that come up that we didn't expect, that sometimes are far better stories than what we would write down at this point. You know, looking out at, I guess, what we would call the usual unexpected stories.
Yeah, I wish... Yeah, that'd be interesting to kind of, I should have asked you, what will we be surprised about? But gosh, almost all these stories have elements anymore that surprise you. I mean, who would have thought some of the things that have occurred? One thing I wanted to ask that just came up last week, James, is, you know, Cindy Axne seemed to be in a pretty strong position, even with the new district heading in to reelection. However, the story came out about her accusations, I think, or... facts are there about her dealing in some stock trading and in stock she or committee might have been overseeing. Is that going to play a major role?
It's hard to say. My guess is no, it probably won't. It's one of those issues that opponents will bang on. But they don't seem to have legs. I mean, we've seen similar accusations against members of Congress in the past. Dave Loebsack was one of those people who really was pushing legislation or rules in Congress to limit the financial dealings of members of Congress just for these reasons that, Republicans are bringing up about spending tax. However, it doesn't seem to get a lot of action, and I'm not sure that it has legs, but I'm sure we'll hear more about it as we get closer to the election.
Well, to summarize James Lynch's predictions here for the top stories to watch next year, at the top of the list is elections. That could have taken all five of the topics. He went down and summarized the key races, starting at the top down to the bottom at the legislative level. He also mentioned the coming session of the Iowa legislature and whether Republicans have a trifecta of control of both houses and the governor, and will there be a split, if anything, between the members of the moderate wing of the party and the more conservative wing. Interesting to watch. Another issue he said to watch is how the state decides to spend, or if it decides to spend, American Rescue Plan funds, as well as Build Back Better, when and if it passes, as well as the infrastructure money. So a lot there on the table. I think that's very interesting. You're too savvy to answer a question I'd love to ask, which is who's going to win the election. So I'm not even going to ask it. But I really appreciate you taking the time to think that through. It was very, very interesting. I think our listeners have got something here to be looking at for this year and next year. So, James, I want to, again, thank you for taking the time to be our guest today on Heartland Politics.
Of course, Robin. I appreciate you having me on.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.